Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have something extra special for you. We're going to celebrate the work of the Honorable Paul Hellyer, the former Defense Minister of Canada. Now, Mr. Hellyer will be here to discuss his latest book, The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. This book and his previous work, Light at the End of the Tunnel, combine his 50 years of experience at the highest levels of government with his brave candor about how the global financial system is crushing humanity on many levels and must be stopped before it's too late. Now, Paul Hellyer has the rare distinction of being the only official of cabinet rank in the G8 countries to publicly state on the record that UFOs are real and that a covert program exists to reverse engineer their advanced technology. Today, he'll share even more. Here we go. The Honorable Paul Hellyer. Money Mafia and the UFO Cabal.
Will you tell the American people to whom you lent $2.2 trillion of their dollars?
Any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
Tell us who they are.
No, because the reason that is counterproductive.
Tell us who they are.
No, no.
They took the money, but they don't want to be public about the fact that they received it.
We've got to persuade the Americans that we don't want a world where somebody's got to master the world by armed force. We want a world where we change our priorities and get rid of these huge defense expenditures and use the money to provide food and shelter and education and clothing.
You know, sometimes you get this feeling when big events happen or new information comes to the surface that raises the public consciousness that the world is in for a major paradigm shift. I had something of that feeling when I was speaking with Paul Hellyer. Now, when we started the interview, he was actually a bit under the weather, having just recovered from a major cold, but he was determined to get his message out, and we were lucky enough to be there. Now, I've prepared a short overview of his fascinating career, along with some key excerpts from his new book, The Money Mafia. So let's get started. A small group of very powerful people have been using the cover of globalization to undermine the powers of nation-states with the ultimate goal of creating an unelected world government under their control. The new world without borders will be like a zoo without cages. Only the most powerful of the species will survive. The inevitable result, already evident from worrisome statistics, will be a two-class society, where a very small minority possess immense wealth, while the majority will be condemned to relative poverty. Even worse, the poor and the powerless, who are increasingly being denied the benefit of hard-won rights going back to the Habeas Corpus Act of 1679, augmented by the evolution of a system of rule by law, will be denied the legal protections for which their ancestors fought and died. The giants have to be brought down to normal size and the cartel dissolved. The big Wall Street, City of London, and other giant banks can only get away with their blatant grand larceny as part of a larger group that dances to the same piper. The cartel comprises of the giant banks, the Bank for International Settlements, or BIS, the Bank for Reconstruction and Development, or World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and a worldwide network of central banks, of which the U.S. Federal Reserve System, the Fed, is the most notorious, powerful, and inimical to the public welfare, both in the U.S. and internationally. Of this list, the BIS, IMF, and Fed should all be terminated on the basis that their net benefit to the human species is negative. The reasons for globalization were always obscure, but they can be summarized as follows. The elimination of the middle class by allowing multinational corporations to move production jobs offshore to foreign producers, a reversal of hard-won trade union gains since World War II, and above all, the transfer of power to unelected, unaccountable international bureaucrats under the control of the New World Order. Thank you. The Honorable Paul Hellyer was born in Waterford, Ontario, Canada. He was first elected to the House of Commons in 1949 at the age of just 25. He went on to hold senior posts in government. When he became Deputy Prime Minister under Pierre Trudeau's cabinet, he questioned the housing policies of the government and resigned the post as a matter of principle. As Defense Minister, he unified the Canadian Armed Services, a historic achievement. His deep interest in fairness and economic reform led him to author several books on the subject. In 2005, Mr. Hellyer came forward and stated unequivocally that, quote, UFOs are as real as the airplanes flying overhead, unquote. His bold leadership on this issue may be his most enduring legacy yet, in combination with his exposure of the global cabal in his new book, The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. Paul, it's a great privilege to have you here. First off, I want to congratulate you on an amazing career in politics and also for your excellent work as an author on the Money Mafia.
Thank you very much.
Now, I wanted to start off with something that I've heard you say often, which is that World War III would be fought between the big banks and the citizens of the world. Now, can you tell me what you mean by that?
Yeah, the Third World War is already underway between the banking cartel, the money mafia, as I call them, and the people. But the trouble is that the bankers are already on the battlefield and the people are not yet engaged. And we have to get engaged very soon or it's going to be game over before we get started.
Now, what would you say is a good way for an average person to get engaged on something like this, since the battle is already underway?
Well, the first thing they have to do is understand something about the problem, because most people just accept the status quo as far as the international banking system is concerned. And the sort of spot response I get from people is, well, leave it to the experts. Well, I said, the experts have been running the world for the last 50 years, and look at the mess it is.
Right.
And so something new has got to be tried. Something new is absolutely essential. It, basically speaking, governments have to create part of the money, at least. And I've been pumping for 34%. There's some people say who say maybe they should create all the money. I do not agree with this for reasons which I explain in my book. I think it's unnecessary. I think the banking fraternity have a role to play, a continued role. But more in the nature of a public utility rather than masters of the world,
yeah,
which is what they've been for far, far too long. So we have to, first of all, understand what the problem is, and that is the reason, really, for the money mafia.
Uh-huh.
And then once we understand, then we have to demand some action. We have to demand some action from the president to create enough money, which he has the technical legal authority to do, to get the economy up and rolling, and then to get rid of the Fed, which is a 101-year-old curse to the United States and the world.
Right.
It has caused more problem than just about any institution you can possibly think of. It is still doing so. It is the handmaiden of the banking cartel and the so-called cabal of which it is a part. And it's out to take over the world, which it's doing very quickly, unless there is a counterattack. And so what I'm calling is a counterattack, which involves creating enough government-created money, as we call it GCM, to get the U.S. economy back to the point where there are jobs available for people, where the states aren't starving and cutting back and reducing or eliminating programs of all kinds of benefit to people, and then get rid of this terrible evil, the Federal Reserve System, which is privately owned, which a lot of people don't know. It's not a government institution.
Well, it's an excellent point, actually. It's just a network of private banks, and, you know, people automatically assume that it's a federal institution because the president gets to appoint the chairman, when in fact there's no government oversight, and it's about as Federal Express. So what do you think the real aim of the Fed is?
Basically, it is to do the will of the banking cartel, and it's been doing it for 100 years. It's got to stop. There will be no just world. No just world and peace, just as long as the Fed exists. And we've got to get rid of it and replace it with a legitimate publicly owned Bank of the United States. We'll call it whatever you like, but basically it would be could be modeled on the Canadian precedent. We have the Bank of Canada, which has the legal authority to determine our money supply and provide us with some cheap money if it wants to, which it used to do, which it should do again, and which is responsible to the government and not to the cabal and the international banking cartel, which is the apex of the cabal that's been running the world.
Yeah. Now, Paul, would you describe the crash of 2008 as a financial coup by this cabal?
The answer is a bit complex, but it was a deliberate act under which some of the biggest of the players did all right.
Uh-huh.
And as a matter of fact, most of the big players did all right because they had enough political clout to get the poor taxpayers to bail them out.
Right.
And it's not just to the tune of $700 billion, you know, or whatever at the time. They've been... The Fed has been creating trillions of dollars to help the banks and major businesses around the world that are its friends and, in fact, its bosses, because it is under the control of this horrendous octopus that is the international banking cartel or the cabal, if you include the whole stick and caboodle, you know.
Well, that reminds me of one of my favorite quotes of yours, where you describe the global financial system as a serpent that's strangling the money supply.
It is the head of the serpent, which is coiling around Western civilization and drawing it tighter and tighter and tighter, and making Western civilization more and more vulnerable to an unhappy end, including the United States. And as I suggest in the Money Mafia, we have to cut its head off. In other words, it can no longer run the world. But they have never really been held to account.
Definitely.
If they were, and there was any justice in the world, some of them would be in jail, in my opinion.
So, you know, when you have these chairmen of the Federal Reserve, like Ben Bernanke or now Janet Yellen, saying that this QE system of pumping money into the economy and giving zero interest rates to the big banks is a good thing, and, you know, don't worry about it, we know how to handle the economy, what's wrong with what they're saying and doing?
Well, if I can use a bad word, it's baloney.
Right. Where does this money go, anyway?
It goes to the banking system. They use it to buy stocks. And get back a huge profit. And they're buying ports and oil companies and doing all sorts of things which they have no business doing. It's not their business.
Right. Now, we've had the Federal Reserve here in America since 1913, so they've had 100 years to consolidate their power. You know, the congressman and former presidential candidate Ron Paul tried to push through an audit the Fed bill. And that did actually pass the House, but it never got through the Senate.
But, do you know how long it took him to get an audit?
How long?
Well, years.
Yes, right.
An audit. The Bank of Canada is audited every year automatically.
That's amazing.
The reason is because the Fed's got a lot to hide.
Yes, and the biggest thing that they have to hide is that they're manipulating this money system in a totally secret fashion.
To the advantage of the banks.
Okay.
And the detriment of the people.
Right. There was a rule put in place after the Great Depression called the Glass-Steagall Act, which was pushed into law by President Roosevelt. And basically, it prevented the mixing of commercial with private accounts. So basically, the banks couldn't play the market with the public's money. Now, that was overturned, and the whole thing was rescinded by President Clinton in 1999 with the Treasury Secretary Rubin, who was a Goldman Sachs guy. So my question is, you know, what have been the consequences of overturning this law?
Devastation.
Uh-huh.
And what, in effect, was the deregulation of the banking system, which meant we haven't learned anything from the Great Depression, or we've forgotten everything we learned because all the people that understood it are dead.
Right.
So we're going to make the same mistake again, which they've done.
So after 75 years, they repeat the same mistake, and they decide to forget what it cost the world the first time around. And here we go again, right?
Absolutely, and repeating the same mistake with the same results.
Yeah, gotcha. So what happens is when they lifted Glass-Steagall, this money we put into the banks now can then be transferred between the personal accounts and the commercial side. So they can take your private funds and use them to play the market and gamble, basically.
They have, yes.
Yeah. And this is the nature of the problem. You have an interesting chapter in the book on the three sisters, as you call them, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderberg Group. Now, these are three big players in the money mafia, according to you. And my question is, how are these organizations participating in this global financial takeover that we're seeing?
They are the apex of what I call the cabal. The cabal is this organization which is basically running the United States and much of the world.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure there are Americans who think that the President and Congress are running the U.S., and if that's the case, they're very much mistaken.
Okay.
The President and Congress haven't run the United States for generations.
Uh-huh.
It's been run by this non-elected group of people that we call a cabal, just to sort of put an envelope around them.
Sure.
The three sisters, the oldest one is the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right.
And it was interested in building an empire from the way back.
Okay.
And wrote about it. I mean, it wasn't a secret. So in effect, they said, we'll take over. And we'll incorporate this empire and make it the American Empire, but bigger, you know.
Right.
Sort of the greatest thing since Rome kind of a thing.
Right.
The Bilderbergers were number two. It was run primarily by people in the banking industry. And they kept bringing together more and more power, bringing in the heads of big industries, heads of state, and all these people, and getting them under their control. And I would say that the Bilderbergers are so powerful that people have no idea. Far more powerful than the United States Congress, far more powerful than the Canadian government, which just plays a very big part.
Mm-hmm.
And just really pulls the strings. But they decided along the way that Japan was getting stronger, that they should have some liaison between Europe, the United States, and Japan. So they formed another one called the Trilateral Commission.
Right. And this would be in the early 70s.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, late 60s, early 70s. And now, this is Rockefeller again.
Well, it was Brzezinski's idea. And Rockefeller took him to the Bilderberg meeting and bounced this idea off the Bilderbergers.
Right.
And it played well there, so they came back and did it. But they worked together, and mostly the same people. So it's, I mean, which hat do you have on this morning?
Right, right.
It doesn't
right.
really matter, because you're all part of this New World Order concept of building an empire, which is not a democracy.
Right.
Which is an unelected government of vast proportion, responsible to them. That's what the aim of the game has been and still is.
What's amazing about the CFR is that if you go through that list of presidential appointees, you know, Attorney General, Secretary of Defense, Treasury Secretary, they're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So obviously, that's the intermediate step to get into this inner circle.
You have to join the CFR if you want to get ahead.
Right.
So these three organizations, some of which have been around since World War I, would actually constitute then a kind of shadow government, would you say?
Well, they're ahead of it.
They're the head of it.
The most powerful element.
Okay.
The shadow government includes intelligence agencies.
Uh-huh.
Or partially.
Right.
Multinational corporations. Heads.
Yes.
And a chunk of the U.S. Armed Forces. They're all in it together.
So we have the military, intelligence, the secretive three sisters groups, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderberg Group, in league with the heart of the financial powers. And this constitutes that shadow force we're talking about.
Yes.
So what's their goal?
It's an international, I think their goal has been and probably still is, a new world order.
Uh-huh.
Which is, you can call it what you want, but basically a dictatorship.
Right.
Which they're in the process of putting together with their trade agreements.
So in the final analysis then, what you're saying is that they are in the process of building a worldwide corporate dictatorship.
Something of that order, yeah.
Yeah. And the idea is that, you know, in some circles they call it a corptocracy, where it is the corporations that are growing in power as they do this. So now if we look at recent history, like back when they pushed NAFTA and GATT in the 90s, there were people we had running for president like Ross Perot who warned about a big sucking sound of jobs going to Mexico and abroad. And everybody will leave, all the manufacturing will go. And the Clinton administration said, no, this will create new jobs, you know, et cetera. And so now we can see that all the manufacturing did leave America along with the good jobs. So obviously these trade policies like GATT were made to strengthen the corporate powers and the money mafia, and they had to decimate the power of labor representation versus capital profits. And that's where the structural unemployment comes from.
All of the money that the private banks create. And that's about 97% now. It's all created as debt, which has to be repaid as interest, with interest. But no one creates any money with which to pay the interest. So what do you have to do? Borrow more money. If you don't, your economy doesn't grow. And if everybody's already loaded up to the ears with debt, who's going to borrow the extra money to provide jobs for the millions of people who are unemployed? And the answer is no. And that's the reason I say that the system is fundamentally flawed and has to be basically changed. And governments have to take the responsibility for creating some percentage of the total new money supply every year so that they can balance their budgets at all levels of government, federal, state, municipal, balance their budgets with reasonable tax levels, probably less than today, and maintain full employment.
Right. Well, when you were the defense minister of Canada and you unified the armed services of the country, a lot of people said you couldn't do it, but you made it happen, and it was a pretty monumental task.
It was.
I can only imagine. But when you look at the global economic problem and the tools that the governments have to face it, and you recall the things you did politically to unify the military at that time, do you think that the solutions that you outlined in your book, The Money Mafia, can be achieved? And can we turn the tables and get the power back from this cabal?
Theoretically, yes. It can be done.
Uh-huh.
But not without millions of people.
Yes. Everyone has to get on board.
Everybody has to get on board because what the cabal has is money.
Yeah.
What the people have are votes. So it's a question of either mobilize millions of people, especially young people,
uh-huh.
I would say veterans and others, but all the people who care about their country and care about the future of the world because they're intertwined.
Right.
Say, enough is enough already. We're going to stop this before it's too late. It's very close to too late now. But if millions of us acted immediately, you know, by that, I mean, within weeks or months, it would change. Things would change.
Interesting. You know, this vision you have of the change that could come about, you know, we hear a lot of scare tactics on the other side saying, oh, if we ended the Federal Reserve, you'd have the worst depression since Germany in the 1920s. How do you respond to that?
I would say just the opposite is true. The day you got rid of it and got your own central bank, it would be like getting out of jail or getting out of or ending the World War or something like that, Liberation Day. And it's possible. I'm an optimist or I wouldn't be talking to you today.
Sure.
And I believe people have got to try. But if they all say to themselves, you know, well, it's been going on for so long, nothing we can do. Heaven help them. And I mean that literally.
The apathy is the biggest killer.
Apathy is the dead weight of the system. And believe me, these people know that there is a lot of apathy.
Yeah.
They can get away with almost murder.
Yes.
Murder.
Yes, right. Absolutely. So would you say then that the debt is kind of like a new slavery?
It is exactly like that. We are debt slaves.
Yeah.
And this is not just incidental. This is coldly calculated. I call it business plan.
Right.
On the part of these people.
So let's just say that's this 1%, which is actually, if you look at the statistics, they're doing better than ever while regular wages for families are falling and the middle class is disappearing in America especially. So that 1%, if you look at the chart, somehow is doing better and better and better. So could it be any more clear-cut that it's becoming this kind of rich elite group, very small group, manipulating the system and sort of gaining the benefits while everyone else seems to be going into decline?
That's what's happening. And it's I think, by design, not by accident.
Exactly. So let's go over some of your bullet points because you provide some excellent solutions in the Money Mafia, and we've touched on a couple of them. But let's just go down the list here of these solutions you propose. One of them you came up with is for the banks to reduce their leverage from, say, 30-1 or higher to 2-1.
Yeah, well, this is all happens automatically if you adopt the system I propose.
Uh-huh.
Where the government creates 34% of the money. That means that the banks have to reduce their leverage down to the point where they're only creating twice as much money as they've got capital.
Right.
The economists will know that, but most people don't know and don't care. It makes a big difference because with the present system, the banks have more control. And all they have to do is increase their capital and they can increase the money supply. But under the proposed system, the government would decide the rate of expansion of the money supply and control the banks because the banks would have to have forever 34% cash in their vaults or on deposit with the central bank.
Right.
And so they can only increase their loans as fast as the government wants them to. And no faster.
Well, that's very important, I think. That would make a huge difference. You know, a lot of people said when Obama got elected during the 2008 crash that, you know, isn't this great? Here's a guy who's going to have more of the common touch. And in your book, you said that you were initially hopeful, but then you were pretty horrified that the economic team he appointed when he got in were in fact some of the same people who had engineered the financial coup and the housing crisis in the first place.
The ones in charge of the mess.
Yes.
Same people.
Yeah. Well, Larry Summers, right? He engineered the derivatives mess.
Geithner was in the system, becomes the Secretary of the Treasury.
So that's the inside game there. So he obviously was the kind of the tool that they needed to get back in.
Yeah, well they were in charge. The way they work it, they play both sides against the middle.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter whether you have Republicans or Democrats. In many ways, minor differences. But as far as who's running the world is concerned, it's the same crowd.
And Obama, who's been in charge for the last 6 years, didn't take any of the financial powers to task for their criminal activity. None of the players or CEOs from Bank of America or Goldman Sachs were charged with any violations. And so too big to jail is what the administration said. So, in truth, he was the best friend the banks ever had.
You look at his staff over the period, you'll find that there's been a lot of banking influence there. And you know, the people around you have the most influence.
Yes.
And they have direct conduits to the bankers, and that's, you get the same result.
Now, Paul, you said these new trade treaties, such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the U.S.-Europe agreements, including one that's being debated in your parliament now, are acts of treason because they're transferring powers that are exclusively in the domain of the federal government and transferring them to private banks. So how dangerous are these new trade proposals?
It doesn't matter whether you use Webster or Oxford. When you're giving away something that valuable, which in our case is worth trillions, in your case is worth tens of trillions, that's not good. That's kind of selling your country down the river, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you said that they're good at using these weasel words when they come out. And instead of saying that we're transferring this over, they're saying we're enlarging the partnership. Or
you've got the lingo. Yeah, they pick the words, and then, of course, the papers pick them up.
Right.
They control the papers.
Yes.
And so this is what the public believes.
They've got the incredible control of the media.
Well, let's switch gears here, and I want to give you a lot of credit for taking a courageous stand on the question of UFO realities, and also for exposing that this cabal that we've been talking about has access to this kind of advanced technology.
Yes.
Now, there's a very interesting aspect of your work, and you do include in your new book a chapter called Visitors from the Starry Realm. It's a bold thing you're saying, and we're all grateful when someone comes forward with your impeccable credentials and says this. Now, it's obvious there's something else operating in our skies. We get thousands of sighting reports every year, and we also have whistleblower testimony that this cabal we're talking about actually has reverse-engineered some of these crash retrievals, and now they have access to advanced science and tech that the public knows nothing about. So my question is, how did you get into this side of your research?
It was only 10 years ago, roughly, that I started getting interested in the UFOs and the extraterrestrial presence and technology. And it just started from a young man from Ottawa sent me information. Amongst the things he sent me finally was a book by the called The Day After Roswell by Philip Corso.
Yeah.
A retired lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Intelligence Agency. Took me a couple of years to get around to it.
The timing was right, though. Somehow you picked it up and you clicked with it. And Corso had that incredible career in intelligence and in the military. So he was a very trustworthy source.
Yes, and one of my friends knew him very well personally.
Okay.
So I said, you know, here are these visitors from other realms, and I find out later that they've been visiting Earth for thousands of years, and now we're back engineering their technology.
Right.
We're using a lot of it in our daily lives.
Uh-huh.
Which is good. There are several species. Do they all love each other? Do they all love us? Or do some of them engage in wars, and how is the United States Air Force going to react?
Yes.
In this situation, are they going to start shooting at them? Well, actually, they started shooting at them the day they arrived.
Okay.
Because they said, you know, you're in our airspace, and we're going to go after you.
Right.
Well, in the early days, that didn't make much difference because the defense mechanisms on the UFOs were such that the bullets just bounced off them.
Uh-huh.
And they're protected by the electromagnetic shields and so on.
We probably seem almost primitive doing this to them.
At that time, yeah. But in 60 years, according to sources, the United States has replicated flying saucers.
Right. Well, of course, we have Ben Rich, who was the CEO of Skunk Works for Lockheed. He confirmed that, and that's brushed aside in the media, you know, when he said, we now have the technology to take ET home. But it's pretty high-level confirmation for what you're talking about.
I've had other confirmations, but I thought to hear it from him was pretty high.
You mentioned other confirmations. You spoke with Edgar Mitchell. You guys have a regular friendship.
Yeah.
That's terrific. What does he tell you about alien contact?
Very little.
That's still his training, right?
Yeah. That's what he was trained to do.
But he did confirm to you that there are other alien species.
He said, well, how many species do you think there are? Referring to the ETs.
Yeah.
And I said, well, somewhere between 2 and 12. And he said, yes, that's what I think, too.
Okay.
We were both undershot by a long way at that time.
Right.
But it just confirmed that he was... in the loop to a much greater extent than I was and that most people are, and that he knew what was going on, and he also knew that a lot of my intelligence officers had no clue, because the whole system is operated on need to know. The president doesn't need to know, nobody tells him.
So it's compartmentalized.
Yeah, all compartmentalized.
Well, this is very interesting, because this cabal then has access to this advanced technology. How dangerous a situation is that? That they have this ability to experiment and use this technology, and we on the public side don't have any idea what they're doing.
I think it's potentially very dangerous. The problem is we don't know how dangerous. The American people have a right to know what trillions of dollars of their taxpayers' money or debt have been used for.
Yeah.
What has been accomplished? Is it positive or is it negative? What races are they working with? What are their objectives? Do they have a history that we should know about?
Yes.
Thousands of questions that a good counsel would come up with. And the Congress has really been derelict in allowing that kind of money to be spent for 60 years. And not know what it was spent on.
Right. Okay, let's go now to some key excerpts on this from your new book, The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. These are from the chapter, Visitors from the Starry Realms. My concern has changed to passion as I've become increasingly aware that the three subjects, the banking cartel, global warming, and the extraterrestrial presence and technology, are all inextricably interconnected. Consequently, in order to get the picture, you can't just study one, you have to understand them all. This is possible if you abandon the mass media as your principal news source and do your own digging in relevant books and the internet. Equally important as the information about government crash retrievals and their extensive cover-up was the revelation of allegedly authentic information concerning the top-secret Magic Eyes Only, or MJ-12 as they are more popularly known. The small group originally established by President Truman to monitor and exercise control over the whole spectrum of the extraterrestrial presence and the exploitation of their technology. The MJ-12 documents purport to show the extraordinary lengths that were to be taken to keep the public in the dark. President Truman was probably the last president who could count on the truth from his advisors. Eisenhower had to threaten the use of force to gain access to parts of the truth.
Subsequent presidents have all had to live double lives where they were theoretically in control but actually powerless to use their constitutional authority. Each was given a briefing on the ET presence and technology, but only to the extent the overlords trusted them to stifle the truth and play dumb on the subject. Any deviation would result in a single term, or worse. There has been so much information withheld from the public for such a long period of time that it will be difficult to know where to begin. Certainly the crashes of UFOs in the 1940s and the frantic efforts to replicate the aliens' technology would be the one appropriate launching place. The number of questions is legion, but they are all important. It may be necessary to repeal or suspend the National Security Act of 1947 so that witnesses will be free to speak truthfully. It may also be necessary to grant a general amnesty to the many civilians and members of the armed forces who have broken numerous laws in the course of what they were led to believe was their duty. That's very compelling stuff, Paul, I have to tell you. I guess my question for you now is, what do you think that the aliens are doing here?
The activity of the UFOs increased markedly, I think, just after the first atomic bomb was exploded in White Sands. And they started showing up, almost coincidental
yeah.
with that. And from what I can learn, they have taken a complete inventory of what we have, where the missiles are stored, where the stockpiles of bombs are, all of that sort of thing. They know it all because they're frightened. When I say frightened, concerned is a better word.
Right.
Because they don't think we've got the common sense to get rid of them and not use them.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, our record is not very good. And there are maniacs from time to time who would do anything. So they're concerned about that. And they're also concerned about the fact that we are fouling our own nest.
Yeah.
Clear cutting the forests, throwing garbage in the ocean, digging mines without rehabilitating the sites. All of the things that, I guess you could say, the certain group of people complain about. They are saying that this is wrong.
Uh-huh.
This is your home, and you're wrecking it.
Yeah.
And you're wrecking it to an extent where if you don't do something about it, and soon, there are going to be consequences that will be horrific. And you can't find out what horrific means, but it means bad, very bad.
So they see that we're progressing towards polluting the Earth, and also that we're in danger of nuclear proliferation, even an accident. They could be looking at it from that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Their presence has been confirmed by some retired military officers, other high-level people, but it's actually a small number, which includes yourself. And you're the first cabinet-level person from a G8 country who's sort of come out and admitted to the existence of UFOs.
Unequivocally.
Yeah. Which I have to tell you is great, because it sort of inspires others to come forward, perhaps. But what do you think of that? Do you think you'll be seeing more people come forward to start to talk about this on a real high level?
But on the subject of leadership, a year or so ago, I guess a year ago, May or something, there was a citizens disclosure.
Right. They had the hearing, and you were part of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was sitting with a number of Air Force officers, retirees. One of them pointed to me, and he said, "You're the reason I'm here."
Oh, that's great.
Which made me feel good.
Definitely.
And if people would come to understand what I'm talking about in the book and do something about it, then you begin to get a kind of chain reaction.
Right.
To change America and ultimately to change the world.
Because this is not just a curiosity about other life. They're actually their presence is having an impact on what we're doing, because if we're reverse engineering their technology, our own technology level is going up, and a small group has the power over that technology. One of the things you trace really well is about how Eisenhower and Kennedy were aware that there was this group that was sort of running away with the UFO technology, and they were trying to figure out how to get that control back. So that's how long we've been fighting that battle.
Unfortunately, they never did get it back.
They never did, yeah.
No.
Do you think that Eisenhower's famous speech was related to that somehow? Of course, everyone always talks about how odd it was for a military hero in his farewell speech to warn against the military-industrial complex.
It was related to the ET file.
Wow.
And he knew he'd lost it.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to threaten to send the army in to find out what's going on amongst people under your command, that's pretty serious.
Right. We have that testimony that they were keeping the covert UFO program at Area 51. So Eisenhower sent the word down, either you share your advanced technology research now, or I'm sending a special military team to take over the place.
Come and find out for myself, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was that only that threat that got two or three people to go in and take a look. But no one's done it since.
Right. So that's kind of almost like an independent government unto itself at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think President Kennedy followed in that line, and it painted a target on him by these covert groups who saw him as a threat to that secrecy.
Well, the cabal never wanted to see a president totally in control.
Right.
Except their control.
Right, exactly.
They give you so much rope. If you get too far away, it begins to tighten up.
Yeah. Well, with Kennedy, they pulled it really tight, which makes that an even worse tragedy. You know, I wanted to mention here that you do an excellent job of tracking this paperclip program that brought a number of Nazi scientists here, which infiltrated many of our intel circles, NASA, and helped to create this whole culture of secrecy, and use these kind of Nazi methods, and how detrimental it was that we rolled this influence into our secret military and intelligence circles.
I'm afraid that's true.
So this kind of post-war Nazi influence was probably a great driver in all this secrecy.
This is another thing we have to find out. To what extent is it still there?
Yeah. You've mentioned this interesting quote by President Clinton about a government inside a government. Do you remember that?
Yeah, there was a veteran reporter there. I forget her name. Probably you've got it in your mind. I don't know.
I think it was Sarah.
And she asked him why he hadn't come clean on the UFO file.
It's Sarah McClendon. Okay.
There is a government within the government, and I don't control it.
Now, this is President Clinton at a press conference.
What an omission.
Yeah.
The commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the most powerful country in the world, with all these nuclear bombs and with replica UFOs, and the commander-in-chief doesn't know what's going on. That's serious.
Yeah, it's amazing. That is amazing. And do you think then somebody like Clinton may have actually been interested in learning more about the UFO topic, and he actually, as president, couldn't penetrate that circle?
I suspect he may have had a visit from someone that he knew who said, look, Mr. President, you can ask questions, but don't
go too far.
Paul, my last question for you today is, what are the top three threats that we're facing, and just a brief headline of how we should handle them?
We have to start by getting the money situation under control.
Okay, that's number one.
That's number one in urgency.
Okay.
Then we have to get the global warming under control.
Uh-huh.
And my prescription sounds very drastic. No more expansion of the tar sands. No more fracking. Stop. Period. Stop.
The fracking. Forget it. Yeah.
Terrible. Heaven knows what it's doing to future water supplies.
Definitely.
And set a goal of 7 years to replace the power plant in every car, truck, tractor, airplane, and home in the world. 7 years.
7 years.
Change them all over. And it is possible.
Change it from fossil fuels to clean energy.
Yeah. The clean energy that's held, the cabal knows what it is. They have the patents. The president can demand that they're made public and available to the world, and should. And every plant that's making drones, atomic bombs, and munitions, convert to building the boxes necessary to install in the cars and trucks and tractors and airplanes and homes to save the world from horrendous consequences.
Yeah.
But it takes that kind of dedication. It would have a wonderful healing effect.
Uh-huh.
Because the young people are today looking for challenges. Some of them going, I'm working with ISIS, for example. You give them a positive goal. Say, look, we want to recruit you and young people all over the world. It doesn't matter whether you're Muslim, Christian, or Jew, or Hindu, or Buddhist, or whatever, because we're all in this together.
Okay.
We're going to recruit you to save the world, literally, because it's going to be your world and the world of your children and grandchildren, and it's not going to be good if you don't do it, but if everybody was involved, it could happen and would happen.
So it would give youth culture a real purpose.
Absolutely. They've got to have a purpose other than seeing people lie to them and cheat them and take bribes from them and do all the things that are going on in the world today, which give a very wrong impression as to what our standards are.
Paul, what are the stakes if we don't take action against the money mafia?
Well, then none of the other things can happen. Because you can't change all the energy sources in the world without money.
Right, right. Well, how dangerous is it to leave the financial powers in control and let them accomplish their New World Order plan?
I think it means goodbye world as we know it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Don't ask me what that means, but it's because only heaven knows. And I think they wish that we would guess and do something about it.
Absolutely. That's well said, sir. The last thing I was hoping you could leave us with is your profound serpent quote, because that's so powerful. And, you know, when you say that the global financial system is like a snake coiling around the people of the world, and to defeat it, we have to chop its head off.
You just put it perfectly. So I just say amen to that. You have to cut its head off. And then the coil loosens, bondage is gone, and freedom reigns.
Yeah, well, that's what we want.
And we can have our genuine liberation day and really start saving our future and making the world better for generations to come.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for being on the show today. I strongly recommend everyone go out and get a copy of The Money Mafia. It's an outstanding work with a lot of important solutions for the U.S., Canada, and the world. I also want to let you know how much we appreciate you going to bat one more time to help humanity in crisis.
I wondered why I was kept around this long, but I guess there's some reason for it. I'll keep going as long as I've got strength.
Okay.
That's all. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me for this powerful overview of the Money Mafia and UFO Cabal with the Honorable Paul Hellyer. You can find more special reports, interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. See you soon.